Hello?
Hi.
Joey?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Hey, man. Oh, I'm doing all right, man. Just got a lot of my party. I haven't been dodging the message or nothing, man. Just I'm going through the course. And I moved, and I took a headshot on all this decision at one time. So, I'm sorry I haven't had time to talk to you. I know it's pretty important to you to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
What we're hearing is a recording of the very first time Carrie Mae Parker's ex-boyfriend Cody was questioned in connection with Carrie's disappearance.
I'm not understanding why y'all think I had something to do with Carrie's disappearance.
It's grainy, a call on speakerphone recorded from another phone, and it's not great for a podcast, but I think it's something you should hear anyway.
I love Carrie very much. She's a special type of person in my life, and we had a good relationship. Up to the point where I went to jail, she met somebody else or whatever she was doing while I was locked up. But when I got out, man, we tried it, it didn't work, and I had left her.
I've listened to it dozens of times since we got a hold of the MP3 early on in reporting this project. It's an amazing moment hearing one of the people closest to Carrie tell his side of the story for the first time ever. And long overdue. From 1991 until 2014, no law enforcement officer even bothered to ask. That's kind of investigation 101, talk to the boyfriend, the exes, and yet this is the first time anybody did. But even that's not the most amazing part. That voice questioning Cody on our end, does he sound familiar?
You put her in the car and then y'all had left together and that was the last time that anybody there had seen her.
It isn't a detective or even a cop. It's Brian, Carrie's first child, who was about to turn 6 when she disappeared. He had time to completely grow up before anybody asked Cody a question. Then he had to do it himself, 4 years after her family filed a missing person report in 2010. Brian still beat them to it. From KETR Public Radio in Northeast Texas, I'm George Hale, and this is Buried, a podcast and investigative series about the 1991 disappearance of Carrie Mae Parker, and about a party and a fight. In that 7-minute recording, Brian was trying to confirm some of the rumors he'd heard about why his mom went missing sometime in early 1991. His grandfather died in 2015, but before he did, he told his children of a plot to kill Carrie over a drug deal that went south. He told them she was afraid of Cody, who was digging a big hole on his property. And all sorts of other strange things were going on. Carrie's ex, Leonard, turned up dead in Dallas from an overdose, but some suspect foul play. A missing person report filed with the county constable disappeared. Then Carrie's sister filed a separate report in nearby Kaufman County, and it turned into something else. And a hitchhiker told Carrie's older brother Glenn of a place on the main road in Quinlan where she believed Carrie was buried. And that woman turned out to be Cody's ex, somebody who stayed on the property and knew it well. And on top of that, Glenn started hearing something else, about a party in the most dangerous area of Lake Tawakoni.
I know somebody knows something. But around here, it's kind of hard to get any help when you got the police not really wanting to do anything about it. And I feel it's because my sister wasn't any one of a great importance. Either that or some of the rumors that I've been hearing are true.
That's Glenn, Carrie's brother. The last time he saw Carrie, she was crying at a convenience store and claimed Cody had tried to push her out of a truck on the highway. Weeks later, Carrie went missing from her job, as far as they knew. That's why they turned to the Terrell Police in 1991, hoping to file a missing person report. Carrie worked at a filter factory called Flanders Precision Air.
And she had went to work. It was like on Friday. They were going to have a little holiday or something, 3 or 4 day holiday. She went to work. It was proven that she went to work, but she never did come back home. It was rumored that she'd went to a party. Called Hawk Cove now.
Hawk Cove is the name of a town on the north side of Waco Bay. Carrie Mae Parker lived on the south side in the Waco Bay Estate Development. Hawk Cove is about halfway between there and Quinlan, places all minutes from one another. It used to be called Whisker's Retreat when it started in the 1960s, but something went very wrong in the 80s and 90s. I'm searching for words to describe the place today. It's tiny, for one thing, only a few hundred people. And to describe it back in the 1990s, the description I've heard the most often is lawless. as in there weren't police, at least not the kind that I'm used to. It's hard for me to even picture this, but residents of Hawk Cove say that until the mid-1990s, when they formally created the town, law and order was largely enforced by a motorcycle gang. So, when Glenn started hearing rumors that his sister might have been seen one last time in Hawk Cove, well, that wasn't a very comforting thought. In this episode, we're going to learn about some of the things Cody said in the years after Carrie went missing, and the altercation that Carrie's family believes happened right before she vanished. To do this, we're going to listen to Brian's recording and hear what Carrie's sister Patricia and brother Glenn took from it. But first, let's get back to Glenn, who places a lot of weight on some of the things he heard Cody say over the years.
And I never really suspected Cody until about 8 years later, me and my wife were staying at the Wagon Wheel Motel in West Milwaukee and went to get some ice. Well, I got a little alleyway in between the buildings. You got the main building, which they ran out. Then they got the office. And in between is a little alleyway, a little space where you can go in between the buildings and go to the front, go to the ice machine or a pay window for at night, because you had to go to the pay window at night time if you rented at night. And I seen a guy that looked just like Cody, but he seen me and he pulled a jacket over his head real quick and ducked down and went past me. Well, I thought that was kind of odd. If it was Cody, you know, we're all supposed to have been friends, and my sister was his girlfriend for 2 years. Pretty serious, you know, it's kind of odd. So I followed him back to the room. Sure enough, it was Cody. Well, I seen him display, you know, we're still kind of buddies at the time, and I still wasn't putting two and two together. So we kind of hung around and got chummy, and I ended up buying a place in Point, and he rented the house next door, him and his girlfriend. We talked time to time. And I'd hear him getting fights with her and stuff, and he would really be loud. I mean, he'd slam stuff against the wall hard enough to break windows, you know. And that kind of tripped me out right there, because the whole time I was with my sister, when we was out in public or go to the boat ramps to go swimming or whatever we was doing back in the day, he always was respectable. I didn't really ever knew he was quite that violent.
Then Glenn started hearing rumors about a fight between Carrie and Cody. But let me back up a second. This was big news to Glenn because he and Cody got along for years after his sister disappeared. Then some weird comments here and there started making Glenn wonder if Cody knew something more about the last time anyone saw Carrie.
Anyway, a friend of ours named Todd Langford came to visit Cody one day, and I seen him out in the yard. Well, Todd was one that hung around Cody and Carrie and Leonard and Arvin back in the day. So I got to talking to him, and Cody was in the house, and I don't even know how he overheard, but he did. And we got to talking about Carrie in the old days, and all of a sudden Cody comes running out of the doggone house screaming bloody murder. I told you not to talk about Carrie Parker. The only person that knows what happened to her, and he's dead. He said that to Todd. I mean, screaming like he just wanted to kill Todd. Pointing his finger in his face and what, just act like he just, his face all red, like he wanted to jump on him. And I'm thinking, how would you know that? You know what I'm saying? I mean, what would have went through your mind? The only person knows what happened to Carrie Parker, and he's dead. Didn't mention his name, Jim. I'm just saying that's what came out of his mouth.
Oh, you said Jim?
This is before I knew about the party.
You said Jim?
Yes, he said the only person knows what happened to him, and he's dead.
Is Jim
dead? And his name was Jim. Yeah, he's dead.
My ears definitely perked up when I heard about a dead guy named Jim possibly knowing what happened to Carrie. And that is because right before I met Glenn that day in Waco Bay, I listened to Brian's recording. He says the last time he saw Carrie, she was speaking to their mutual friend, Jim Wilburn. They were at his trailer in Hawk Cove. He's the one who hosted the party. Not only that, but he died in 1994, precisely in the middle of the time period between Carrie going missing in 1991 and this conversation years later.
Is that because he says that they left the party together, Carrie and Jim?
Probably the same jam. He had a place there in Hawk Cove, and they had a party there, and I heard him and her got into it. This is a rumor how I heard about the parties too. Other people. You know, because around here, a lot of people know everybody, and there's people that know you that you don't even know on the other side of the lake. That's how it is. Well, anyway, we thought the party was just a rumor, but the friends that said what happened to her, She went to that party. They got in an argument over another girl. Carrie got mad and told a drink in his face.
Does it sound like her?
Oh, yeah. See, Carrie was mad about, when she got mad about something, she didn't give a doggone word, but when she said it, who was there when she said it, you know, and I think that was one of her downfalls.
So, to quickly recap, Jim Wilburn hosted a party in Hawk Cove. Carrie and Cody were both there. They got into an argument over another woman, and Carrie threw a drink in Cody's face. I'll fill in the details as we go along, but let's get back to what Glenn overheard.
But you know, he said the only person that knows what happened to Carrie Parker is dead. Now, how would you know that? Okay. That's number one. Then I got to thinking back to about 2 weeks before she come up missing. What Carrie said that he tried to do to her. And I'm like, putting two to two together, I mean, it really doesn't take an Einstein to figure it out. He's the only person that she had problems with at the time. He tries it once, and 2 weeks later, she's gone. We never see her again.
Here, Glenn is talking about the last encounter he had with Carrie at a convenience store in Quinlan called Easy Mart. He said she was crying and claimed Cody tried to push her out of a truck. And then right afterward, people are talking about a public fight.
Well, I didn't think much of the party because I really couldn't prove it happened until Cody was able to record him talking about the party
to Brian,
and it actually did happen. And what I really think is she never left that party.
We couldn't do much to fix the quality of this recording, but it's short and I'll translate along the way. Luckily, Patricia told me all about it in our first meeting, so I have her on tape explaining parts of it. And Brian even thinks he remembers his grandfather mentioning that Carrie planned on going to a party, possibly after her shift at the factory. March 17th was a holiday, St. Patrick's Day. I've gone through all the local newspapers from 1991, and that's one thing that stands out about the day. In the March 1991 issues of the newspaper, local bars were advertising parties a week ahead. We'll talk about it more later on, but one draw to southern Hunt County at the time was a town on Lake Tawakoni with an inordinate amount of rowdy bars, an island of debauchery in an otherwise dry county.
Apparently she worked and finished her shift. Now, I was told through the investigation I've been doing, that after work, because March 17th was a holiday. So my brother and them started hearing that the last time anybody else had seen her was at a party after work.
That's Patricia. She's the one who tried to file a missing person report with the Terrell Police Department in Kaufman County, since that's where Carrie worked. But the rumors of a party after work throw that off. If she was last seen at a party in Hawk Cove, it places her back in Hunt County when she went missing. And in the recording, Cody tells Brian that, well, yeah, the last time he ever saw Carrie was at a party in Hawk Cove. And it was at Jim Wilburn's house, like they've heard.
I have a recording of when he called my nephew. He said that the last time that he saw Carrie was at a party.
And I was at Jim Wilburn's house. Party. We
got a party. Ooh, really? Damn, that's what we heard. No, I didn't really say that, but, you know, it got your interest up.
Yeah.
Because you're confirming now that she had went to this party.
Carrie come up, and we had danced a couple dances.
He said that he was dancing with some chick named...
And there was a girl, but I don't know her real name. But
what was her name?
We called her Cactus.
Cactus, that's her name. Cactus, yes. And, you know, of course, I'm sitting here thinking Cactus now. Does she have a real name? So anyway, he was dancing with some chick named Cactus, and he started naming off these people that were there. One of the names was,
I was there, Todd Langer was there, Jim Lillen was there. I can't remember his wife's name, she was there.
Right.
He was sort of naming people off. The only full name or even real name that Cody can remember being at Jim's house is Todd Langford, his best friend. Other than him, there was the guy who always pulls on his mustache and Cactus.
He was dancing with this girl named Cactus, and Carrie got jealous. which I believe that. And so she had asked Cody, you know, well, you going to sleep with her or whatever? I guess that.
He asked me if I was going to sleep with her. I said, "Are you a puppet? We've been talking about
it." Anyway, he replied, "Yeah, I might." Mm-hmm. And so she threw her drink in his face.
Well, she started drinking my face. And God got upset about it. I said, "Man, I don't worry about it." I said, "I had to come and just go with you." And so then, she come on and talk to me. She said, "I'm fine." And they talked for a while. She came back in, said, "I'm drinking. Everything was fine."
And then he says that everything was all chill after that. Everything was all cool. And, you know, I'm just standing there. It's all cool. I don't think so.
To Patricia, this is Exhibit A for Cody not being trustworthy. Who's all calm and collected after having a drink thrown in their face? Plus, she knows her sister.
But see, what they don't understand is it didn't end at the drink. I guarantee you it didn't end with the drink coming in his face. And her just walk out like nothing, you know. That's not the way that shit ended. Everything was cool, and then she went outside.
No, I can go anywhere with her. Jim did.
He said that she, last time, you know, she was out there talking to him for about 30 minutes or so, and then he turned around, and they left in her car and was gone about 30 minutes.
I heard him and rode around, but, I mean, she come back with him. I mean, I've seen her.
And came back, said she came back and was sitting out there with them and had another little drink.
And then they went and rode around and then come back. We were all standing outside and he talked to her for a few minutes through the window and then she left. And her and Jim left again. And when she pulled back up with Jim out of the car, that's the last time I've seen her.
Before she ended up leaving, and that's the last time that he's seen her. Some guy named Jim, who threw the party, his name was Jim Wilburn. And guess what? He's dead, too.
So, to recap, there's one still alive person with a real name. It's Todd Langford. Weirdly, he was harder to find than most of the nameless people in Cody's story. Aside from Todd, there's Jim, who's dead, his unnamed wife, that mustache guy, and, of course, Cactus. By the way, this was day one for me. The audio is from the first time I spoke to Patricia, when she gave me the recording of Brian's call. This series and podcast, everything you've heard so far and everything you're going to hear, it all started in an attempt to verify some of the things Cody told Brian and about the rumors that motivated the call.
Well, see, other people at that party that we had talked to had said that after she was throwing the drink in your face that y'all had gotten through it outside and that you had put her in the car and then y'all had left together and that was the last time that anybody there had seen her.
No, sir. I never left the party. I stayed right there. Made Todd Langford, Cactus. There's another guy, and he's probably still around there. He always pulled on his mustache all the time, pulled down on it.
For the record, we didn't put Brian up to this. He recorded it in 2014, and we met 2 years later. But I was eager to hear the recording. I asked Brian what he even remembered about Cody from before his mom went missing and how he was able to get a hold of him now.
I remember instances, and I can remember his parents. I remember being in his home, but I don't remember conversations or anything like that. I don't remember any physical violence, or I don't remember fear, but I remember being there, and I remember my birthday. His parents got me, like, the New Kids on the Block bed sheets and things like that. Yes. And I thought it was so cool then. And, you know, I used to watch westerns with his dad. And I remember the furniture they had. And then I remember a newer mobile home that they he stayed in on the same property that I remember the most. And we used to sleep on the floor in the living room on pallets.
Brian and I also talked about memories of Cody in a conversation about Brandy's dad, Leonard.
I remember him coming out to my grandfather's house and bringing Brandy so we could visit with her. And I remember loving him. I remember he was always a good, yeah. Apparently, like, I don't remember this, but my grandmother said that, you know, whenever I was born, Leonard was already in the picture and he stepped up and took the role as my dad. So, I mean, he was always good to me and I have good fond memories of him.
And did you feel the same way about Cody too?
No, I don't have any feelings. Like, I don't. I remember, like, him being around, but I don't remember having good or bad feelings.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to to distinguish if I did have good or bad feelings, if it was not also my grandfather telling me the things he told me as growing up and having that resentment.
Yeah, yeah. So
the other day, I asked Brian what it took to get a hold of Cody. We were talking about something else, but I realized I didn't actually know how they connected. He dug up the conversation, which was over Facebook. It started friendly, but went downhill quick.
Okay, so it was April 12th, 2014, whenever I first reached out to him. And, yes, I was doing all right, that I'm good, working, taking care of the family. I told him that I remembered his parents. He said, yeah, he misses them real hard.
This must have been pretty awkward for you.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Guess it's like, what do you even think you're going to say anyway or whatever?
Right. I asked if there was anything that he might remember about my mom by any chance. And he said, sure, I remember her. It's been a few years, but I can. And let me see here.
Yeah, I'm curious because this is like a yet another version, you know?
Yes, yes. And so, like, I can give you my opinion and my thoughts, but they're just, like I said, opinions and thoughts.
Yeah, but who better?
I did message him a couple more times, and he said, oh, sorry, I got sidetracked. Then he sent me a smiley face, asked how I was doing. That was good. And he gave me a thumbs up, said it was cool. And then I messaged him again, nothing. And then I messaged him again, nothing. On the 15th, I messaged him, nothing. On the 28th, I messaged him, nothing. On May the 7th, I got frustrated and wrote him that long, pretty much like, you know, I just told him how I felt.
What did you say? Do you mind me asking?
No, absolutely not. I'll just read it.
Yeah, sure. Not busy either.
I tried to talk to you several times about my mother. You have yet to get back from me. I haven't heard from you. I want you to know that I'm not mad. I don't have a grudge. Also, I want you to know that I've always known what happened to my mother, Carrie, since I was a little boy. It's never been a secret. I think more or less whenever, you know, once I became a teenager, because whenever I was little, I didn't know.
Right.
So, and I was probably just venting because I was mad.
Yeah, sure, but like...
Many people have talked over the years, people that were close to you. My mother was not as stupid as you may have thought. She had told my grandfather things, reasons she was scared. You were digging a hole, one too big for a septic. That's the reason I don't believe your story, that only one person knows where she is and she's dead. You know, with an exclamation mark. I understand she's not perfect. I get that. I understand that she was in over her head, not with just you. There is no way that you could have been smart enough to do this by yourself. Oh, wow. That was pretty mean.
By the way, that is the meanest thing I've ever heard Brian say.
I know about the other people involved. Cody, I know what happened. My family knows what happened. Do you know what it's like growing up as a little boy, crying yourself to sleep every night, hoping that your mother will come and hold you, kiss you, and tell you that everything is going to be okay, and she don't? This emptiness has caused me so much pain for me as a person. I'm not mad. I don't have a grudge. But I don't know what happened. I don't want justice. All I want is to bring Carrie home. I know you're only human and that you make mistakes. I only pray that you can find peace in what you've done. Maybe you can make anonymous calls to authorities to giving her whereabouts. No matter what you choose to do, whether you do let us bring her home or you continue to sit on it, I want you to know that I've forgiven you. I pray you choose to do the right thing. Please feel free to write back. I know this has caused a great deal of pain. I know that this caused you a great deal of pain. You have had to live with the truth as well. I'm here if you ever want to talk, even if it's not about Carrie. I say all of this with love and truly mean what I say when I say I forgive you. And then he responded, let me see, 20 minutes later. Brian, call me. We have to get some things straight.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi.
Cody?
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Hey, man. Oh, I'm doing all right, man. Just got a lot on my plate. I had some dog in the message, man. Just I'm going through the course. And I moved, and I took a headshot on all this decision at one time. So I'm sorry I haven't had time to talk to you. I know it's pretty important to you to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, Brian didn't make this recording for a podcast, so I'm going to repeat a few things Cody said to make sure you heard it.
Okay.
In the recording, Cody's at work in East Texas.
I'm not understanding why y'all think I had something to do with Terry's disappearance.
Okay, so Cody says he doesn't understand why the Parkers think he had something to do with Carrie's disappearance.
I love Carrie very much. Special type of person in my life.
He loved Carrie very much. She was a very special type of person in his life.
And we had a good relationship up to the point where I went to jail and she met somebody else or whatever she was doing while I was locked up.
And they had a good relationship up to the point where she got with somebody else or whatever she was doing while Cody was locked up.
But when I got out, man, we tried it and it didn't work and I had left her.
He says they tried it and it didn't work and he left her.
Is this your number?
Yes. Yeah.
The call lasted 7 minutes before Cody ended it abruptly, saying he had to get back to work. Brian says he never called back.
And then I followed up with him the next day, asked him if Cactus ever worked at Sonic. Do you know where Carrie was staying at the time? He said, I think she was staying at her dad's, not for sure. And I don't think Cactus worked anymore. I think she moved off.
Did he write back after that?
Yes, after that, I put, do you know Cactus's real name? Do you know if it was Stacy? He says, no, I don't remember, but I know it was Stacy. I said, did you know a Stacy or Jim's wife's name? And then he never replied, never heard from him since.
And were you asking about Stacy because of the, what you told Glenn, I guess?
Yes. Yeah.
It was good to go through this with Brian because there was a reference in his recording that I didn't get. Cody's speculation that Carrie might have followed some dream? What does that mean?
Well, went after that dream or what? You know, I mean, I don't know, but I know she talked about it a whole lot.
Cody was vague about it, but I later discovered he was referring to something he claims Carrie told him shortly before she disappeared. It came up when I asked Patricia if she thought it was possible that when Carrie drove off that day, she just kept driving to get away from it all. And maybe she's out there alive somewhere.
You know, I have nightmares about that with my sister, about how pissed off I would be if it had came to that and all everything that she's put us through.
I mean, but do you think it's possible?
No.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, because when before she told me what she did with my ex and I lived in Houston.
Yeah.
I asked her if she wanted to come to Houston. I don't know why. She didn't really tell me, I don't recall what the conversation led to it,
yeah.
But she must have been unhappy.
Yeah.
So I said, won't you just come on to Houston and, start over, you know?
Yeah.
And she didn't want to, she didn't want to leave Quinlan. Just from that conversation is what, when I started investigating and thinking about it and everything, you know, she wouldn't even come to Houston where I was. Why would she? Oh, and Cody says,
the only person I've ever spoken to who believes that Carrie is still alive is Cody. This is the thing I didn't get, Cody's reference to Carrie following her dream. But here's what Cody was talking about. And bear with me, because it's really weird and out of left field. Here's me hearing it for the first time.
He said that, that Carrie always, when he told Brian that there's stuff that his mom did that he didn't, you know, that she talked about all the time that she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about how he says that she always dreamed it was her quest or dream or whatever to go to Mexico and be a slave prostitute or hoe or whatever. And who the when I'm hearing this, I'm like, oh my freaking God.
That's just too ridiculous.
That's just, I know my sister had problems, man. I know she had issues, but she ain't fucking dreaming to go to fucking No, sorry, I started getting... Yeah, I want to go to Mexico and be a sex slave. For real? Is that the most ridiculous shit you ever heard in your life?
I heard him say dream and say, yeah, I wonder what that means.
But that's no. What he was talking about.
Crazy.
What does that tell you? That speaks volumes to me.
But it was interesting just kind of hearing his perspective on it. And he tried to just convince me that she wanted to run away to Mexico to be a prostitute. So
by the time I met Brian, I was looking for anything I could find about this crazy Mexico sex slave thing. I asked the State Department for copies of passport applications and got nothing back. But you didn't even need a passport to cross from Texas into Mexico back then. One obvious connection to Mexico is that Brian's dad was a Mexican citizen. But he was out of the picture years before Carrie went missing, and there's no indication she even took his name, much less his citizenship. To this day, I'm not sure if the Mexican sex slave idea was something Carrie really said, perhaps as a joke, or something that Cody misremembered or made up. All I can really tell you about that is that nobody other than Cody has ever said anything like this either to me or anyone I've met. The only thing said relating to Mexico, and it's not even about Mexico, it's about a Hispanic person, was that a Hispanic man from Alabama killed Carrie after a drug deal went wrong.
Well, she had told my grandfather that you and her had got mixed up with some of the drug dealers, the cartel down here, and that somebody pretty much had to go down for the missing coke.
This is something her father pieced together and told the grandchildren later.
And it was either you or her. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to it. I mean, it's not just like, you know.
Well, Brian, I can assure you it's all false. I've never been involved with any type of drug stuff there on my life.
Well, she had told my grandfather.
See, the way that my grandfather explained it. See, my grandfather, what he explained to me, and I don't know if my aunts told you this or not, but he said that he had found out later on that there was a man from Alabama who was Hispanic who was hired to kill our mom because she had threatened to go to the police with everything she knew, and because it was law officials and judges that she pretty much had to die. And the way that he explained it to me, and I don't know how he got these details, but what he had told me, and I should have asked, and I don't know why I didn't, but he said that she had gone to the party, had gotten into a fight with Cody because Cody was with another woman, threw a drink in his face, and that they went outside yelling and fighting, and that was the last that they had seen. I think I've gotten the most out of him than anybody else, but I'm also the one that, you know, pursued it harder. And I don't know, my grandfather always told me that the firstborn grandson or grandchild is always has a special place in his heart. So I kind of feel like my grandfather favored me over everyone.
And
the way that I treated him as a teenager, I feel horrible, but you can't go back. And, you know, I wish I could appreciate that a little bit more when he was alive. I don't know anything about him. I don't know a name or anything. My grandfather just said that he was Hispanic and that he's dead now. Now, there was a woman that my Uncle Glenn dated for a while. Her name was Trish. I remember she had told me that she had heard a similar story about that fight and everything that had gone on. And she didn't know, like, she knows my grandfather, but they didn't have those types of conversations because my grandfather was always like, we don't talk about this. Trish had verified some of the things that my grandfather had said, but she went on to add that, you know, she was shot in the back of the head, execution style, and put in the trunk of her car and buried along with other people. So she said that this place had two or three vehicles there that had been buried previously before because they had to deal with other situations, and that the place, they called it the Crowbar Bottoms.
Buried is produced by Emma Anderson and me. Its executive producer is Jared Knight. Brad Davis composed the original theme music. Our photographer is Brittany Greider. And podcast cover art is by Crystal Sid. Special thanks to the Hawk Cove Police Department, as well as Lisa Gunter, Donna Smith, and the Quinlan Community Library and Museum. To stay on top of future episodes, you can subscribe to Buried via the free NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Buried is a production of member-supported 88.9 FM in Commerce, Texas. To support this and other programming, go to ketr.org and click donate. And thanks.